You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Wednesday, July 7th, 2021. Find us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and subscribe so you get this show once it drops. We will not have a guest today. I apologize for that. I also apologize for the delay. We're going to move the show back, obviously, Wednesday and Friday this week because of the holiday. I couldn't connect with one of our guests, so that will be re-racked. I also have to let you know that for the first time in, I started as an intern at WGN Radio in the fall of 2012. From that point forward to July 2021, I have never been able to close my computer for a week. I have an opportunity to do that coming up. So I'm going to take some PTO. I've never had paid time off. So there will not be episodes of Chicken Dinner next week, but we'll be back and we'll be ready to rock and roll after my vacation is over. I'm just taking off Monday through Thursday, then coming back next Friday. So if you're wondering if I fell off the face of the earth, the answer is yes. I am taking some much-needed time off, and I might even leave the laptop at home. I'm definitely leaving the equipment at home, but I'm getting out of Boston, and it's time to relax for a little bit. It is the All-Star break, too. You know, there's not much going on. We might have an NBA Finals game or two. Actually, we will, because game two will be on Thursday. So we'll have some NBA. We might make some picks, but there will not be shows or columns or videos or anything like that. So we'll be back and better than ever after next week. Record check on the show, 154, 147, and 5. We're up 0.7 units. So not down, not up all that much for that matter, but still just churning butter and trying to do our best to make things work. No guest today, as I said, and a special guest coming up on the show on Friday. I saw a tweet that made me laugh out loud on Monday morning. Friend of the show, Whitey Bulger, and when I say Whitey Bulger, of course, I use quotations around it. He's on Twitter at Triple Oss. He said this, quote, ESPN Plus increasing $10. Is it worth it? Question mark. I didn't know that. A response to that tweet, though, is what killed me. What? F them. Well, it sucks, though. I bet on random soccer, so I need it. Complaint? Expletive? Well, I'm going to pay it anyways. That's hysterical. It takes me back to the days of the early pandemic when we're in, you know, April and May, when there's no sports yet, and people are firing on Russian table tennis and Nicaraguan soccer and Korean baseball. I had a call the other day, too, with Mike Seeley, who does some writing around the country for a couple different companies, and he asked me about the Olympics, the 2020 Olympics, and he said, Sam, I have a couple questions for you. Do you think that people will bet the Olympics in 2020? I said, yeah. I said, this will probably be the biggest handle that we've seen across this country on the Olympics. He said, well, what about the time delay? I go, I don't care. Doesn't matter. People are going to bet it. We have enough soccer experts in the Euro. More candy in the candy store, the more likely it is that people are going to bet. So yeah, I think the Olympics are going to be very, very popular to wager on, especially if people have money in the account and there's a game on the board. We've seen that. I mean, if people are betting on Nicaraguan soccer and Korean baseball and table tennis, yeah, they're going to bet on the Olympics. And we have more states, it feels like, every single month. We're in the high 20s now. So, yeah, I think it's going to be fine. And I know that some bookmakers in Reno are loading up with their Rolodex. Every shop is different. If you don't want to offer Olympic betting, you don't have to. I think you're going to see single game events, and I think the one market to look out for is the medal count. Some books will only do the golds. Some books might do gold, silver, bronze. It's an over-under per country. And in fact, in the offshore markets or the global markets, the USA, their gold number opened up when they first put it up offshore. The over-under for gold medals for the Americans in the 2020 Olympics was 46.5. And that number's already been bet down to 43.5. I saw one book has a 42.5. Well, why is that? The swimming. For decades, you have been able to pencil in the Americans for 12, 14, 16 gold medals. Odds are good that the Americans are not going to be as strong in swimming. They might win a lot of golds, but you can't just check off a box and pencil them in for 12, 16 gold medals anymore. So people that are very sharp and follow this stuff for a living have told me that because the Americans have gotten weaker in swimming and other countries have gotten stronger, you are seeing a push on the under. I know nothing about this. I'm just telling you what I've heard. I talk to a lot of people, as you know. But the answer is yes, I think the Olympic handle will be fine. And I think this will be the most popular Olympics we've seen as far as wagering in this country. Back to that tweet, though, about ESPN Plus and have to pay for it because you got to watch random soccer. I did a bad thing on Saturday. I tailed a really sharp soccer bettor on the Czech Republic. Took the half goal, took them to advance. This, of course, on the heels of me making fun of wannabe soccer experts on the show last Tuesday, of course. So I guess that's karma for me firing two soccer bets. Hey, talk smack about people that don't know soccer that bet soccer. Well, Czech lost 2-1, so I lost both. 0-2, down 2.3. I guess it's what I get. You hypocrite. They had every chance to equalize it. It's 2-1. They had 40 minutes to tie it. Didn't happen. But I respected the information. I respected the line move. Because we took the Czechs plus a half goal at minus 125. The market got as high as minus 160. So I don't really hate the play. I don't love the result. But that's what I get. I talk smack about people betting soccer. And then I give out two soccer picks. So I hope I don't do that to the listeners ever again. I guess what I'm trying to get at is I'm sorry. We have to talk about this Giannis uncertainty for the books. It's a nightmare situation for these books. And this is nothing new in the 2021 NBA postseason. I got a text last night when Giannis gets cleared to play from one bookmaker in Vegas. Son of a bitch, he said. Because for multiple days, the books don't think Giannis is going to play. He's got a left knee injury. Tuesday, he gets upgraded from doubtful to questionable. Then he gets upgraded from questionable to game time. And the sportsbooks are in limbo the entire time. They've been at Bucks plus six for multiple days. Giannis is a go. All of a sudden, the market, which had already gone from 6 to 5.5 once it was listed that Giannis was game time, the Bucks got bet down immediately. This always happens. The Avalanche always happens. Bucks were bet down plus 4.5. Some books went to plus 4. And then there's the buyback. People come in on the Suns, -4, -4.5. I know guys that had -4 and +6. Not the biggest middle in the world, but if it lands 5, you hit the nuts. The books hate when shit like this happens because they're shooting darts blindfolded. And then for the better, you're guessing. Whether you admit it or not, when Giannis gets cleared, you have no idea how he's going to play, how he's going to look, how well conditioned he is, if he has any stamina, if his form is any good. He put numbers up, but he didn't look good. I still think going forward, though, it's good for Milwaukee to get the rust out of the way. It's a huge step in the right direction to have him play in that first game because now he should be better equipped to handle game number two and a full slate of minutes, and odds are good he'll be more effective. But the Suns win easily in that game. They win by, what, 13 points? So the Suns cover all the numbers. But this is the second straight game in the NBA postseason where a superstar player gets cleared to play, and it doesn't mean shit. It means nothing. Same thing with Trae Young in Game 6 against the Bucks. Same thing. Oh, Trae Young's in. Oh, my God. Got to bat the Hawks. He was awful. He was awful. How about when Anthony Davis gets cleared to play in that elimination game? Suns and Lakers, round number one. Anthony Davis is in. Oh, my God. Beep, 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 beep. Back up the truck. Anthony Davis plays 5 minutes. Lakers get torched. So be careful when a player of superstar stature goes from out to in. I told a couple people this yesterday. Look, this line tells me that even if Giannis plays, he won't be effective. And the Bucks in this postseason have still not covered a game one. 0-4. So the line told you there was insurance kind of baked into that line. Because I think with a healthy Giannis at full strength in Phoenix, Suns are minus 3, 3.5, maybe 4 on the high side. But the books were expecting either Giannis not to play or Giannis to be sort of, I don't know, jagged. That team didn't look like they were in rhythm yesterday. And when you throw in a guy that hasn't played in a week, that's what happens. He hadn't played in a whole week. Oh my God, Giannis is in. Gotta bet the Bucks. And then people bet the 6 and the 5.5 and the 5, and they go down to 4, and it's dead money. So just be careful when a star player that hasn't played in a while gets cleared to play, especially in a sport like basketball where it's all about running up and down the floor. It's a slippery slope sometimes. I will tell you this, though. Game number 2, I'm looking only one way, and that's at Phoenix. And the market tells you as much, too. There's a reason that most books open 5 or 5.5. Wait a minute. That doesn't make sense, you're saying. The last game opened 6, and they lost by 13, so why is the spread lower? Well, because usually a team like Milwaukee is going to make the proper adjustments, and this game should be a lot tighter. I actually think the Bucks are a good bet in game 2, and that series price all of a sudden becomes a lot more enticing. You can find plus 240, I think, was the highest price. Now, going into game 1, the Bucks are plus 135, plus 140. They lose one game, all of a sudden that price goes up a dollar. I saw one shop had Phoenix minus 290 to win the series. I don't think they're a great basketball team. They're a pretty good team. Are they invincible? Are they unstoppable? No. Your goal as the road team in a 7-game series is to split the first 2. Milwaukee has pretty much played the string already. You lose the first game. You're supposed to as a 6-point dog. I'll be looking at Milwaukee in game number 2. That'll be on Thursday night. The Chicago Cubs, they are who we thought they were. That team sucks. They're a joke. It's over. I tweeted this out at SP Shoot last week. I said, I know this has been building for a while, but that game when they went up 7-0 and lost 15-7, that was the end. For me, I said, that's it. The air is out of the balloon. This team is fucked. How about that 10-game road trip, by the way? They threw a no-hitter in Los Angeles first game. Then they lost the next 9. 1-9 on that road trip. They come back home. All right, we're back at Wrigley. Things are going to be fine. They get their asses kicked. 13-3, 15-10 by the Phillies. 2 weeks ago, today, Cubs are in first place in the NL Central. Today, the Cubs are 9 games out in the NL Central. 42-44. The slide, I don't know that it goes that deep. I don't know that they lose 7 more games in a row. But this team is broken. The manager, we don't know what he's all about. The organization has struggled forever to develop pitchers. And they don't hit the baseball. They don't. So I feel a lot better. You know, 2 weeks ago, I'm like, oh, man, I don't know about that Cub under 79.5. Now we're the favorite. Now we're the favorite. And now you have to believe that decision is very easy for Jed Hoyer in that front office to go, maybe we should start selling guys. Maybe we should trade Javi Baez, Chris Bryant. Maybe we should think about Wilson Contreras. It's over. That team has no shot to win the division. They have no shot to win the pennant, and don't even think about World Series. You look around the country now, Cubbies are as high as 12-1 to win the NL Central. 2 weeks ago, they're plus 250. They've raised a dime in 2 weeks. As high as 30-1 to win the pennant, as high as 66-1 to win the World Series. It's over. It's over. Hockey, tonight, second period over, we're back in the saddle. I've talked for years on this show about right team, right price. Right bet, right price. Right total, right price, whatever. Game one, second period over, 1.5 goals, minus 115, minus 120. Game two, minus 125. Game three, minus 125 or minus 130. Game four, we stayed away. Minus 135, minus 140 pass. Market catches up. And I've been telling Alex Smith this entire time. I have no issue with telling you guys that if I know somebody that I respect, I will follow them. I don't care. If they're great at what they do, I trust them. I watch a lot of hockey, but I had no clue about the second period over. I did say I loved the Lightning to win the series, but I also wasn't going to lay $2.50 or $3. Alex says, hey, man, second period, overs. Lightning adjusts so well. They get so many chances in that second frame. And he's right. Even though that game four second period lost, three irons were hit. They hit the post twice and the crossbar. So second period over in the Stanley Cup final, three wins, one loss. We passed on game four. I'm back game five. Minus 127. Let's go. I saw a post over the weekend from the Westgate Superbook in Vegas. Updated Heisman Trophy odds. And the favorite, still the same. Spencer Rattler, Oklahoma quarterback, 5-1. Then Bryce Young, Alabama quarterback, 6-1. Don't know much about him, but it's Alabama. And odds are good. He's going to be throwing to multiple NFL receivers with multiple NFL offensive linemen with a running back that probably plays in the NFL. Nick Saban always just drops in a guy. C.J. Stroud, Ohio State quarterback, 8-1. D.J. Wongalele, Clemson quarterback, 8-1. Sam Howell, UNC quarterback, 12-1. Casey Thompson, Texas quarterback, 25-1. Also 25-1, E.J. Williams, receiver from Clemson. J.T. Daniels, quarterback from Georgia. And we get to the 30s. Five players listed at 30-1. Brock Purdy, Iowa State quarterback. Keaton Slovis, USC quarterback. Matt Corral, Ole Miss quarterback. Bijan Robinson, Texas running back. De'Ara King, Miami quarterback. I think Wongalele is going to be very, very good this year. There were scouts that said he might be better than Lawrence. I'm going to pump the brakes on that, but even if he's very, very good this year with a loaded Clemson roster, he's going to be in the room in New York. So Wongalele, 8-1. I don't hate that position right now before the season starts. $100 wins you 800, pays out 900. I wouldn't mind if you bet that right now. But there are two players, when I think about quarterbacks, I think about numbers and production and filling the stat sheet, like Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M. Who can light up the board? Keaton Slovis, USC, 30-1. Now, I have my issues with Clay Helton, the head coach, but Keaton Slovis, by all accounts, is going to be a quarterback that could throw for a whole lot of yards and throw for like 40, 50 touchdowns. 30-1 on Slovis. I don't hate that. The other guy plays in the SEC, so it's an uphill sled. But Matt Corral with Kiffin at Ole Miss. This guy put up numbers last year. He's also 30-1. So 100 makes you 3,000. You look at what he did in his first year at Ole Miss, he was moving. And this is a team that's going to play with pace. They're going to run a lot of plays. And this gives a player like Matt Corral the opportunity to light up the stat sheet. In 2020, Corral threw for 3,300 yards, 29 touchdowns. Not bad. Did throw 14 interceptions, but you can iron those things out. He also rushed for 4 touchdowns and 500 yards. So Corral very, very close to 4,000 total yards and 33 touchdowns as a sophomore. Going into his junior season, I expect him to make a leap, and that could be a guy that's very, very dangerous. It's all about the system for this guy. And he's quick. He can move. He gets outside the pocket. Boom, he's gone. Picks up 10, 15 yards, 20 yards. If it's about stats, Matt Corral is going to have a shot. I don't know about Ole Miss. I don't know how many games they're going to win. You look at their schedule. They go to Alabama. They go to Tennessee. Really not that many tough games on the road. Auburn sucks. They just fired their coach. Mississippi State, they got a lot of winnable games this year. Louisville at home, App State, Tulane, Arkansas, LSU, another down year probably. Liberty's good, but Liberty comes to Oxford. Vanderbilt comes to Oxford. That's a win. So this is a team, they might go 9-3, 10-2 with a quarterback that gets you 50 touchdowns, air and ground. So those are just some names I'm thinking about. Yeah, obviously Rattler, Young, Stroud, Howell, those are the big names. The three names that jump off the page for me, Wongalele at Clemson, Slovis at USC, Corral at Ole Miss. None of them are plays yet. I'm just spitballing here on July 7th. That's the way it goes. Two more quick things, actually three more quick things, and then we wrap it up and say goodbye for the show. Has anybody seen this pro foot volley? I was watching this the other day. Pro Foot Volley Tour. It is essentially beach volleyball with soccer rules. No hands. Feet, chest, heads. That's it. That's all you can use. And these players are all clearly former soccer players. So the way it starts, you know, in volleyball, you're behind the line. You throw the ball up in the air and you smash it with your right or left hand. In pro foot volley, ball goes on the ground. You kick it up over the net. And then the other team, it was 2-on-2. 1-on-1 would be, that would be impossible. 2-on-2, I would imagine there's maybe some 3-on-3. So it goes over the net, and then the other person on the other side bumps it up in the air with their chest or their head. And then the next person kicks it, and the next person goes toward the net, hits it over with their head. And it goes back and forth, and this is fascinating to watch. So my brother goes, can we bet on this? Not yet, but probably pretty soon. If you've never seen pro foot volley, I would suggest just checking it out for a second on YouTube. Just spend 5-10 minutes on a foot volley rabbit hole. I was fascinated. I couldn't look away. I'm like, this is incredible. And eventually, if you get a sport like that that takes off, yeah, there will be betting on it. If you could bet KBO and Nicaraguan soccer, you could probably bet pro foot volley. I don't know who's going to market that. I don't know who's going to line that. You're going to need a specialist to learn every player and every tandem. That could be trouble. You might get burned by some sharps, but I was amazed watching pro foot volley. Ben Fox tweeted out the top 10 U.S. states in sports betting handle. This is for May 2021. New Jersey, still number one. $814 million of handle. So dollars wagered, $814 million. Illinois on the two line, $507. Nevada, three, $478 million. Pennsylvania, four, $447 million. Michigan, five, $258 million. Indiana, six, $254 million. Colorado, seven, $249 million. Virginia, eighth, $227 million. Then Tennessee in ninth at $161 million. Iowa in 10th, $115 million. Still no New York, California, Florida, or Massachusetts. I still think in 2 years from now, the top states are going to be New Jersey, New York, Florida, Illinois, Nevada. I don't know when California gets it through. Massachusetts might sneak into the top five too, if they can ever figure this out. And imagine where these numbers are in September. Holy shit. If New Jersey writes $814 million in bets in May, what are they going to write in September, October, November, December? Now, they'll lose a little bit of money to New York whenever they get it going. But eventually, you're going to have a state with $1 billion in handle. It's inevitable. Illinois is going to get to $1 billion in football season in 1 month. Up and to the right. Up and to the right. And I've got a bone to pick with this Jason Barrett. It's nothing personal. It's just the way he like acts like he's covering the whole industry. He's a former radio executive. He runs a blog called Barrett Sports Media. Most of the site is fine. They do good work. But some of us that work in the sports betting space are noticing a pattern with the way that Barrett's company covers VSiN, my former employer. Everything they do is great. Every time VSiN lifts a cheek to squeeze out a fart, Barrett's team writes a blog about how amazing farts are. That's the way it goes. So last Friday, Barrett makes a Twitter post that says, "Hey, VSiN Live announces a Latin American expansion. Congrats to all involved." And then you click the link and it's like, wow, great it is. And now VSiN's going into Latin America and they're going to be in Mexico. And you know what it is. DraftKings is just trying to expand their reach. So now DK is going down into Mexico and going around the Latin Americas, and they're going to try and get more people to bet more money. The way it is, that's fine. It's news. I get it. Whatever. Mind you, though, one of VSiN's morning hosts hasn't been on the air in over a month, and Jason Barrett hasn't said a word. So I see that tweet about Latin America and VSiN, and I'm like, you know what? Are you on the payroll? He responds, "I cover media brands and personalities and business matters related to them." No. Okay. So a buddy of mine, John Lerner, chirps back. "Oh, so what's the deal with VSiN's morning host? He's been gone for over a month. Seems to be something a lot of people are interested in." Crickets. Not a word. Not a response. Nothing. So Barrett only covers media brands and personalities, except for when it might make his friends at VSiN look bad. Amazing how that works, isn't it? Alrighty, that's it. That's the show for today. I said no guests because of 4th of July and some moving parts and all that. We'll be back on Friday. Record check 154, 147, and 5. We're up 0.7 units. Not a lot, but it's better than being dumb. We've got one tonight in the hopper. Second period over, 1.5 goals, minus 127 on the Habs and the Lightning. Cash some tickets, make some money. Coming up on Chicken Dinner on Friday, Barstool Big Cat. Don't go anywhere. We'll talk to you Friday right here at Chicken Dinner. So